This is Real Talk, the Customer Insights Show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Vogel. As we've talked about before on the show, product innovation is critical to get right. And insights is really a key part of bringing new innovation to market at all stages of the innovation life cycle. No pressure, right? So in today's episode, I'm grilling Jason Alliger, Senior Director of Consumer Insights and Strategy at Traeger, on how we can get product innovation right. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, thanks so much, Jen.
So excited to have you on. And you were voted... was it last year in Insight Researcher of the Year? Is that,
yeah. Am I getting that? Yeah, right? I won the Market Researcher of the Year award, which is pretty there cool.
So. Well, congratulations. That's a huge honor.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. I think it was just good timing. I think I'd helped take Traeger public. I was doing some really interesting projects. And so I think the timing just worked out for me, which was cool. It was a nice surprise to get that award.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And you definitely have been doing some pretty interesting stuff. So I'm excited to dig into that a bit today. So maybe just to get us started, can you tell us a bit about your career and insights and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, for sure. You know, my whole career has kind of led to me being where I am. I feel like a lot of people pivot into insights, and I've been pretty deliberate about my career. After undergrad, I worked in two different ad agencies, and one was actually the agency that's behind the What Happens Here Stays Here. And I remember learning how they got that slogan. It actually came from an insight from qualitative interviews with people visiting Las Vegas. It came from two old ladies who would dress up and hit the town every year in Las Vegas. And I remember just thinking that was so interesting that was derived from an insight. And, you know, in my job, I would find insights for clients and things. And then it led me to going back to school, getting an MBA. And I spent a little bit of time at General Mills. And now I'm at Traeger Grills. And I'll tell you a little bit about what I do at Traeger, because it's maybe a little different than your typical insights professional, if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's kind of two pieces to it, right? There's like the normal insights piece, which is like the quant and qual and really looking for unmet needs. And Traeger, you get a lot of breadth because we make grills. We also have pellets, which are the fuel. We make sauces and rubs. We have an app. We acquired a meat thermometer company. So there's just lots of interesting things to explore. And then I'm also heavily involved in strategic planning, which I would argue every consumer insights professional should be. So that's like the one like normal kind of part of my job. The other unique part is Traeger is a lifestyle brand, right? Mm-hmm. So when you lead insights in a lifestyle brand, you get to work on some pretty interesting things, right? So of course, there's like collaborations and things that are cool brands, but I also get to meet people who name their babies after Traeger. Like I've like met a baby named Traeger. It was kind of this cool experience. I get sent pictures of tattoos people are getting, you know, where they get a Traeger tattoo. I get sent obituaries where Traeger's mentioned by name. I'm sent wedding invitations. Like we received one this week where somebody said, we couldn't imagine spending the day without you guys. Your products have carried us through every milestone in our relationship. So I'm leading insights for this brand that is such a part of people's lives. They're naming their children after us. And so you just have to approach things a little differently.
This is so interesting to me. And obviously the topic for today, we want to talk about product innovation, but I really want to spend some time on this because it is, I mean, growing up, like a Weber grill was a big deal, right? Top of the line. Like my dad loved the, like he wasn't grilling. He was using the Weber, right? Like there was something about the brand name, but it was never at the level of tattoos and baby names and wedding invitations. Like how do you take a brand from something that people really love to something that people name their children after? Like that is a whole nother level of brand love.
Yeah. It's a great question. And I mean, if there was a tried and true recipe, pun intended, to do this, companies would do it, right? I think, but in short, I mean, I think an innovative product really becomes part of people's lives. You know, we have customers who use their grill every day. The average Traeger customer is cooking about 50 times per year. So I think it starts with just having a fantastic product. And then the other piece that we've really tried to foster is just a really authentic community, right? So people who have a Traeger, they talk to each other, they share recipes. They're trying to become, better people, better cooks. And so by us kind of fostering a community, it kind of drives that brand loyalty that it's hard to find other brands that are similar to you because our customers are just so supportive of each other and of the brand.
Mm, yeah. That bringing people together is a key piece of it. It starts with a product. So I want to talk about how we create a product that people love and understand their sort of unmet needs, as you mentioned. So when thinking about product innovation, how do you know that something is going to be innovative, that there's a new feature or an update or a new product? How do you know that it's innovative?
Yeah, great question. And again, there's kind of the art and science of it. I actually want to tell you a quick story. It's a cat story, and I think it'll illustrate my point well. So I was in my undergrad. I was driving home late at night with some friends, and as I'm driving, it's pretty dark out, and there's this cat just in the middle of my lane right there. And I'm driving, I'm like, surely this cat's just gonna dart across the street or whatever. And as I'm getting closer, as I'm speeding towards it, this cat's just not moving. And so at the last minute, I swerve so I wouldn't hit this cat, but I still hit this cat. And man, it just really gets your heart racing and you're feeling bad. You just ran over this cat. Well, I look over and in the bushes, all these people are taking, video and they're coming out. And I see in my rearview mirror, they just walk out to the street and they set back up this cat. And so I'm a very curious person, and my friends and I were really determined to figure out what this cat was because it just looked so real. So circled the car around. Long story short, we ended up taking this cat, being chased around by this group of people, but we ended up with this cat, and it was cool looking at this cat once after this chase because it was a really simple cat. It was a cardboard cutout of a cat. And they had used two dimes for the eyes. And what I would argue so is, using a cat and having fun with setting up a cat and having people swerve, which I'm sure is illegal. I would argue that using dimes in the eyes is super innovative, right? Like you only need a crude cutout of a cat, but the dimes are ingenious, right? They catch the headlights. And they reflect just like a cat's eyes do. And they're super low cost, right? The two dimes, 20 cents. And I would argue, the kids on the next street over that are using a cardboard cutout of a cat, but without the eyes, they're just not having near as much fun, right? People aren't believing it's a cat. And so I would argue innovation doesn't always need to be these like big step changes, the most realistic cat in the world. It can be these really simple things that make something more fun or you know, unlock people, you know, using your product. And so there's kind of like what I think we normally think is innovative. And then I think there's like step change innovation that could unlock something.
Yeah. This is, I mean, I'm on a roller coaster here listening to your stories. So far, anytime Jason tells me a story, I'm on the edge of my seat. There's always this crazy twist, but that is so, it's so true what you say about just that small little, you know, upgrade or downgrade in some cases. Like, you know, I think it was Karen Manja on the show a few weeks ago from Salesforce talking about how if you just take something away from what you know the product to be. She gave the example of the sort of naked cake with no icing on it, right? And turning that into this billion-dollar business for milk. And this is another great example of that, of not thinking in terms of what's the massive, big, new thing that's going to take us 5 years to develop and it's going to revolutionize the whole world, but what's a small tweak that can make a big difference in how somebody looks at the product or uses the product or experiences the product, or in this case, the cat. That does sound very illegal, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sure. You know, maybe to even add to that, Jen, you know, when I was at General Mills, I worked with one of the guys who worked on Yoplait, and he was kind of inspired by shampoo sample inserts that he got in a magazine. And he got curious if he could put yogurt in a, you know, in like a pouch, right? And so he created Go-Gurt. And that's been a massive innovation, right? It's not a new product. I mean, the yogurt is the same, but it's a new delivery system. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that's innovation. I mean, I do think too, on the flip side, you know, a lot of people or companies want the next big thing, like the Segway was supposed to be so revolutionary. It had billions of dollars of R&D. Steve Jobs backed it, but it could only be successful if we rebuilt cities. And so it's just like, I think a lot of the innovation is kind of step change, looking at unmet needs, solving problems for today. And so, yeah, if you can approach it that way, that's kind of how you get those big breakthroughs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Segway, I see those things kind of making a comeback as like these golf bag holders on golf courses. You know, people, yes, they just sort of follow people around. Isn't that, you know, I don't know if it's Segway technology, but.
Yeah, it's like there's those things happening. Also for luggage, if you've seen
those. Yeah, I have. Yeah. I've seen the ads for them. I haven't seen them in real life, but I have seen the golf carriers in real life, which is just, not, people aren't really driving the Segways, but maybe they found a pivot for them or something along those lines.
Yeah. I think it's great. So absolutely. I'll happily have a robot carry my bags. Right. I know, right? So
totally. So when you're thinking about, you know, product innovation and, you know, your life cycle for developing new products, what goes into that? What's, where do you start in your process, and like, where does Insights fit into that?
Yeah. I'll tell you about a recent product launch we had and kind of the process, if that's helpful.
Yeah.
So Traeger this year, we launched a new grill called the Timberline XL, and it's $4,000. I mean, it's the most expensive grill that's ever been sold in Home Depot. And our plan, you know, kind of like Elon Musk, when he came out with the Model S, you know, he said, hey, my master plan is I'm going to, you know, come out with this expensive kind of sports car, and then I'm going to bleed the technology down. And so that was our plan too, right? Hey, we're going to develop new technology and then bleed it into lower models as our costs come down, right? And as adoption spreads. Mm-hmm. And so when we were going about creating the Timberline, we were really just trying to solve unmet needs, right? So I remember I was visiting people's homes in the Bay Area and asking about their built-in grills, right? I mean, these are people who have spent thousands of dollars on grills. And I was surprised that most actually chose based on the aesthetic of it, just kind of how it looked, not really the features, the amount of burners. And it kind of showed their order of importance, right? You almost need to lead with design and have something beautiful that people would be proud to showcase in their yard. And you know, and then like features, of course, you know, you need to come up with a differentiated product, right? So in working on this Timberline XL, we really just kind of systematically went about solving unmet needs. So if you look at a wood pellet grill as they kind of existed, you know, they kind of struggled to get really hot because they're kind of like smokers. And so, you know, searing's an issue, right? If you want a good seared steak. And so I remember being in a focus group, you know, we're kind of showing some searing solutions, and people just wanted something to sear well. They don't care how it's made. So we developed an induction burner that was first of this kind, and it sears the best. I mean, you can sear a steak in like a minute on this thing. And so there's kind of like innovation listening to customers, and there's innovation where we just know what the best technology and the best solution is, and we do it. You know,
Yeah,
also,
so
oh, sorry, go ahead.
no, you keep going.
Okay. And I'll just share some other kind of things we found in this project as we kind of approached it. But, you know, you need something that people can build into outdoor kitchens. That's kind of becoming a thing. And so, you know, we solve for that. We saw a lot of people are baking in their Traegers. You know, you can bake a cake or cookies or whatever. And so we made sure the size actually fit a standard cooking sheet, right? You know, you also have to clean grills, which is a huge pain. And so we had an ash clean out system. I also, in just doing ethnographies, saw people using their phones as flashlights or having headlamps. And so, you know, we put a light in the grill, and that just enables people to cook. So, you know, and in the Timberline development and a lot of things I do, I kind of use a qual quant qual approach. And it just helps because you can kind of cast a wide net, look for unmet needs, you validate with quant, and then you go back to consumers to make sure you're onto something. And this product has been a super successful launch. Everybody's written about it. Everybody wants one because it's just a game-changing product, you know.
I can vouch for that. I want one. When I heard about it and started looking around at it, I was like, oh my gosh, this, it does that, it does this. And I'm not a grill person necessarily. I have a grill. I use it periodically, but I saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, I need this. It's got, it's so different from such a different experience from everything else that I've seen on the market up until now. But it sounds like, really your approach is you're not asking for consumers to tell you what to make. You're asking them what
No.
problems they have, right? Like, what are they trying to solve for? What, or you're watching them use it
Yes,
and
yeah.
see, hey, I see that this is a problem, or this is something we can, maybe they don't even know it's a problem. Nobody thinks pulling out their phone and using the flashlight is a problem. But the fact that you fixed it is like, whoa. I never even thought of that, right?
Right. And then what it does, and I think what's cool is, you know, our grills are Wi-Fi connected, people can control them from their phones, but we can see kind of the usage data. And it just unlocks more usage, right? I mean, I think subconsciously, if you're like, well, it's dark, I'd have to get a headlamp and do this, then you know, you might not your desire to grill something would just be less. But if there's a light and it's easier to use than even your oven, suddenly it's like, well, yeah, I'll just Traeger it. Right. And so it kind of just unlocks more usage occasions, which is really what we're trying to do, right? Like I believe there should be a world where people don't have to eat, you know, dried out food, and they should enjoy cooking, and you know, this does it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to go back to something you touched on really briefly, this qual quant qual approach. Which I love. I love hearing about different ways that insights professionals are integrating those methodologies together. So, can you tell me a little bit more about your process and how you think about that qual quant qual approach?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and this goes without saying, but I mean, every project is different. Every problem you're trying to solve is different. But I'll say generally, if you're trying to find unmet needs and validate, and move the ball forward, you almost need to do a qual. So, for me and grilling, it's like I'll, go just watch people grill and grill with people and see them prepare meals. And maybe it's not even grilling, right? Maybe it's cooking. And you just look for things and just try to find what would enable people to, either cook more or just have a better experience, or just unmet needs, right? I think, for example, I'll show this story. I was grilling with somebody in rural Georgia, and he was cooking a number of things, and one was chicken and the other was pizza. And he had cut up his chicken, and then he put that on the grill, and then he pulled off his pizza and he put it right onto the cutting board that he was cutting the chicken on. And he used the same knife that he's using to cut the chicken to cut up the pizza. And it kind of opens your eyes to, like sanitation and grilling is actually this huge unmet need, right? How many people are using tongs with raw meat, and then they, use the same tongs as their meat is finished, and that's what they use to serve the food, right? I mean, you're literally serving salmonella to people, right? So I think some of these things you can only observe, and then you can take that to your product team or to whoever. And they can kind of iterate from there, right? You're giving them something to work with that you've observed or found. And then obviously you'd want to validate whatever ideas they come up with in a quantitative setting to see if there's interest and people would buy whatever you'd want. And then you should show it to them, at the end and qual work and make sure your concept makes sense. And then you're set,
It's that easy.
Easy, yeah. So,
Not it's simple, maybe not so easy, right? It's a simple formula, but the real key is in between, right? What you do with what you learn, which is probably the hard part.
totally, totally, yeah.
So interesting. What are some examples of, really great innovation that you've seen? Whether that's within Traeger, I mean, some of the stuff we've already talked about, like induction cooktop on the side of a grill or a light,
Yeah.
right? A big thing or a small thing, but what are some other examples?
So as I kind of see innovative products or disruptive products, I probably put them into three groups. I'll call them, kind of the usual, the unusual, and the noteworthy, right? So I think the usual, kind of like what you would expect, are the, a company like Netflix, right? I mean, Blockbuster in its heyday was collecting almost $1 billion in late fees, right? So Netflix comes along, there's no late fees, you get these DVDs by mail, and it just solved this huge unmet need, right? So they totally disrupted this video rental category. I think Tesla, that I briefly talked about, I mean, they've just propelled the adoption of electric vehicles, right? And I would say that's super disruptive when you have this whole network of gas stations and service and everything. I mean, they're totally disruptive. And another kind of usual suspect is Uber, Lyft, where historically calling a taxi was painful. I mean, you'd stand on the side of the road trying to wave down a taxi or have to schedule it. Even to be a taxi driver in New York City cost you $1 million to get a medallion. So, it's like Uber coming in, it's totally disruptive. I mean, they just added technology to something that just made it better for both the driver and the consumer. So, I'd group that as like the usual. Then there's kind of the unusual, which maybe my favorite example is Halo Top ice cream. I just love ice cream. And they invented, for those not familiar with Halo Top, they kind of have a better for you ice cream. I mean, a whole pint of ice cream isn't very many calories. And when they were founded in 2011, that's kind of when Netflix and binge watching was taking off. And so people were binge watching, and then Halo Top kind of gave you permission to binge eat, right? You could eat a whole pint of ice cream in one sitting without feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. So I kind of categorize that and other companies as like unusual disruptive companies where they kind of had a good product market fit. And then the last, which I'll call the noteworthy, is I would call like Sonos this, right? Sonos makes speakers. And I think everybody kind of wants like a home theater system or good quality music in their home. But they don't have the know-how to hook up all the wires and have the big amp and everything. And so Sonos just makes connectivity seamless, right? You can set up a whole home theater system in, you know, less than 15 minutes. And so they're kind of noteworthy, right? They're kind of solving this unmet need through technology. I'd probably group Traeger in here too, or other companies like us. Like, we're just bringing taste to what is a boring category, and getting people to cook more. So there's kind of these three categories, but probably the main theme running through them is they just all see the world differently and they're kind of unabashed about it. And they also just have fantastic timing for what they're doing, right?
Yeah, that combination is really key, right? Like, figuring out what that unmet need is, looking at things a bit differently and getting creative and innovative in your thinking, and you know, not trying to do the, you know, a new kind of igniter on a grill or whatever, right? Like, actually thinking more broadly. But that timing piece is key too. I mean, I wonder, I'm sure you've got research on it, like, how much did the COVID pandemic have an impact on people cooking at home and wanting to improve their outdoor spaces and their grills? And, you know, was that a real opportunity for you guys?
Oh, I mean, 100%, right? Yeah. I mean, And you saw this in home cooking or home fitness or other things. I mean, people found a passion for cooking during the pandemic because we're all at home, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, we benefited from that. And I would argue most companies do, whether it's a, you know, technology innovation. So it's like, hey, people have internet access and computers, so now they can order from Netflix, right? Or they have smartphones, so they can hail a taxi through Uber. So, you know, I would say, you know, Traeger, other grill companies, other appliance manufacturers benefited from COVID. And then the real trick is, you know, how do you stay relevant?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very cognizant that most people listening to this podcast, you know, maybe you're sitting here and being like, I don't even have a consumer product, I'm B2B, or I do these other things where, you know, I don't know if we're going to like shake up the whole industry category. But my push is, I mean, you should be reinventing yourself. I mean, Netflix has reinvented itself three times, right? DVDs, streaming, and now media production. And they've stayed relevant and they've fought for it. So if you're not kind of reinventing yourself, if you're working on projects that aren't going to really move the needle, I would totally challenge what you're working on and change it.
I love that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the trick is like, what is going to stick? You know, you get, you know, there's some combination of skill and luck and knowledge. But, you know, a lot of the things that you mentioned of, you know, home fitness, like, I see a lot of home fitness equipment for sale on Facebook tag sale sites, right? Like, that's not really sticking quite as much, but, you know, creating products that people want to continue to use after that initial kind of drive towards that category is really what's going to be have a lasting impact, right?
Right. Totally. It's like, if you can become part of people's lives where it's like a step change for the better, then you'll be better long-term, right? Yeah. It's like, I can't imagine traveling now without Uber or Lyft. Like, even the process of getting a rental car, I see as like too cumbersome, mm-hmm. right? It's just, your life's just simpler without it. Worrying about the insurance for it, where you're going to park it. You know, even even cooking in the grill category. I mean, I think it helps that Traegers actually make food taste better. Like the moisture is retained and it adds flavor to your cook. And so we actually haven't seen a drop off in people cooking between the pandemic and now, which is great, right? People discovered it and you just can't go back after you tasted it. Right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And I think too, as you mentioned, you know, Uber on the travel side of things, I would add Airbnb to that, that category of kind of reimagining how people travel and where they want to stay. And then beyond that, there's a newer company called Turo, which I will never rent a car from a car rental place ever again. It's so much, I've had personally a much better experience with these, you know, Airbnb, Turo type, you know, I don't want to stay at the big hotels. I don't want to rent cars from the big companies anymore. There's a different experience, a more one-to-one experience that, kind of meets a lot of needs that the other companies don't. And they're just, like you say, are doing things in a much different way.
Right. And I mean, I love your example of Airbnb and Turo. And if you think about it, their timing's pretty good. Because, you know, today there's kind of this mind shift to supporting locals, supporting individuals versus supporting big, you know, these big corporations. And so when you rent through Turo, you feel like you're supporting somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're driving somebody's car, not just this fleet vehicle. Sure. And there's kind of this, I don't know if I'd call it altruism, but you definitely feel better about it than just getting a rental car.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure. So, very different. So I want to shift just a little bit and, you know, the insights that we're talking about here, you know, everything that you're discovering and when you're standing side by side with someone grilling or you're watching somebody do something or talking to them, you get this survey data back. How can market researchers, insights professionals do a better job of sharing those insights and those findings with leadership or throughout the organization to help drive, you know, more innovation, more change, you know, better brands, help people to achieve their objectives?
Great question. I feel like this is kind of the opportunity right now in market research. I feel like generally the industry has great methodology, super smart people, but there is this kind of broken link. And I will say I'm passionate enough about this one where I actually teach an MBA course on this. It's called Storytelling with Data. And I think we just as, you know, as an industry need to become better storytellers. So I'll share this quick story. In one of my favorite books, it's called Made to Stick. It describes kind of a frustrated sourcing manager who had you know, these factories all over the world. And each factory manager would order his or her own supplies, right? And so the sourcing manager over the company, he made a bunch of reports and showing that there was cost-saving opportunities there to streamline the process. And as you can guess, he just struggled to get attention and drive change, right? I mean, leadership was just had lots of other things happening running a global company. And so what he did was interesting. He got a pair of gloves from each factory and put a price tag on each one, like just literally what they paid for that pair of gloves. And he just piled it up on a conference room table. And for his next meeting, as each executive walked in and saw this mound of gloves, you know, they start looking at it. There's some gloves that are, you know, identical or very, very close to each other. You know, one would be $2, another is $20. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just start thinking, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, we need to do something about this. And, you know, the sourcing manager was able to drive real change. And so, you know, my question for us is, you know, how many of us are making these big reports or working on these big projects that don't really drive real discussion and change? You know, I'm not saying we all need to go get a pile of gloves for our next presentation, but I do think we could do a better job engaging our audience and having more focus on what the outcome could be. And so, you know, my argument is market researchers just need to learn how to storytell better. I'll have my students and people on my team, I'll have them write down what I call their dangerous idea. And, you know, I even actually did this for this podcast as I was prepping for it. My dangerous idea that I want you to take away is to watch out for cats. so hopefully that came through if there's one thing you remember here. But, you know, it's like, in all seriousness, I would say every report probably needs, like, it needs a one pager that succinctly kind of tells the results and asks provocative questions, right? Executive audiences need things that are succinct. You know, they could read the full report if they want to, but they need like that one page. So for me, you know, it'll be a 2x2 matrix, a pyramid, a chart, you know, something that can be passed around and discussed. And my secret goal is to have somebody actually pin it up at their desk. You know, if you can do that, you've got it figured out.
That's a very tangible objective there. Like, did they hang it? Did they not hang it? A little tougher in the virtual world, but I'm sure people have stuff pinned up on their walls behind their computers in their homes too.
Totally.
And so, I mean, this is interesting. You know, you mentioned on that one pager, you want to share the results, which, you know, maybe self-explanatory, right? The summary, the TLDR version of the full report. But you also said ask provocative questions, which I find really interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like, how do you incorporate that into your deliverable to get people thinking?
Yeah, so let's talk about storytelling with data for a minute. So obviously any good chart or report or, you know, finding should be very clear what the takeaway is, right? And so my argument is, you know, you should not only point attention to that, but you should put the question almost next to the data, right? I mean, at least in my professional experience, what you want to have happen, especially if you're trying to, you know, have executive buy-in or move things along, is you'll kind of sit on the one, you know, you'll all be sitting there either in a conference room or, you know, if you're sharing remotely or whatever, you want to be sitting on that kind of key slide and you should be having a discussion around there. And so if you literally put the questions you want to ask on that sheet of paper, that will guide the discussion, right? And then you have the data kind of supporting it. And so I think you should just put the question on there and that should lead the discussion. And you know, you can guide it in a way because you're the one that's done the work and you're the one that kind of has your dangerous idea that you're trying to move forward. And so why not guide it? Right. So, I would just say we should be a little more forthright in what we want the outcome to be versus just reporting the weather.
That's really important. Yeah. Yeah. Guiding exactly what we want people to do with the information. What are we trying to answer here? What do we want you to be thinking about? Not just, hey, here's something interesting, and move
totally
on.
Yeah. And you'll know, you know, you'll be successful if you get invited to more meetings after doing that. And you know you're not doing a good job if people are declining your meetings or not showing up, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of my barometer. It's like, am I staying relevant? Am I part of these conversations? Am I providing real value? And that's kind of a good barometer for insights professionals, right? If you have a seat at the table, you're doing things right. And I would argue having focus, having clear takeaways, pushing the boulder forward is kind of how you do it.
That's really useful because I think that's the question we're seeing across the industry oftentimes is like, do I have that seat at the table? If I don't, how do I get it back? And I do think that we've seen that increase over the last couple of years in the insights industry. You know, people definitely are you know, insights teams are seen as more strategic partners to the business when you're bringing that proactive, hey, here's what we're learning, here's what you need to do with it, here's why you should care. But I think that barometer of like, are people listening to me? Do they want to take my meetings? Am I getting invited? You know, I just heard somebody talking the other day about how, hey, we've got the company-wide town hall and Insights has 15 minutes in it, right? For the first time, which is exciting, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a good way to know if you're driving impact. And, you know, hopefully it's seen also in that, you know, it's not just about the meetings you attend, but it's like, is your product idea being made? Is, you know, your whatever tracker being used to you know, push marketing or whatever it is that you're working on? You know, the proof's in the pudding, right? If it's actually being used and implemented.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. This was very entertaining and informational. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us today about product innovation, storytelling, all the things. Really great.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for joining us and listening in. We will be back at the end of this week with Brad Dancer of WWE. So we'll see you then.